for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll continue our healthcare reform discussion with Center for American Progress President Neera Tanden, Common Cause President and CEO Bob Edgar, and Maryland Citizens Health Initiative President Vinnie DeMarco. But first, we start things off today with a congressional roundtable featuring Eleanor Holmes Norton of Washington, D.C., Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, and Donna Christensen of the U.S. Virgin Islands. Congresswoman Holmes Norton, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. So good to be with you.
As the Supreme Court takes up the health care law argument starting today, what are you looking forward to most?
Well, remember, this is the first of 3 days, and this day may be the most important because it may decide whether this case gets decided at all, at least for now. This ripeness question, this question of whether it is ripe at this moment, because no one has yet paid the penalty or the tax according to which you believe it is. And generally, the court doesn't hear cases until some act has occurred that shows that the act is in full effect. So while it may be quite technical, it is very, very important. In fact, it is most important next to the individual mandate.
What can we expect in the days ahead in terms of the arguments?
Well, it's interesting that the part of the bill that is also being challenged as to whether or not the Congress can put other people into Medicaid, for which we pay part and the states pay part, no court has held that is unconstitutional. So we're back to the so-called individual mandate. Can you have a health care system at all if they are free riders? And the individual mandate essentially tries to get rid of the financial fact that you and I pay $1,000 more annually for free riders because they decide to take their chances on whether to have health care.
What are you expecting from the court in this case?
Well, you know, nobody predicts this court. If you asked me, and I'm a constitutional lawyer before I came to Congress, you would find, in my judgment, this bill, this law, it's now law, is constitutional. And remember this, and the court may ignore this. After all, the court can do whatever it wants to do. But there is a rule of the court that there is a presumption in favor of the constitutionality of a federal act. Now, we've seen them overturn federal acts before, and I would like to hear how they would rationalize that. But this act is so weighty that the court needs to look at, and this is what it does, it looks at what kind of hearings have been held, what kind of factual basis has been laid for the bill, what kind of documentation is there for the conclusions reached, and if you can overcome that with a constitutional notion, then you can. In this case, there is something different about this case, and that is no one quite has an example where someone had to actually pay something. And so the court could use that as a way to say, well, yeah, there's a presumption in favor of the constitutionality of a federal act, but this is different. The Commerce Clause does not cover making somebody do something. And I think that they would find many precedents that were not quite this, but that led them to this. I also don't think they will find another circumstance where this will happen, because health care is unlike everything else in the market. Unlike everything else in the market, where you purchase it or not as you need it, health care is something you never know when you will need it. So that's why we have insurance, and that's why the bill has been developed this way. And do let me say this, that there is no country in the world that has health care, and most countries do. Virtually all the developed countries do, and most of the undeveloped countries try to have a national system of health care. All of them have a national system. Either it is based on taxes, or it's based on single-payer insurance. We would be the odd man out, because apparently we don't understand the math, which is that the whole pool has to be in it so that everybody gets charged less.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton. Congresswoman, on this notion of health care and not knowing when you're going to need it, how important does that make having the availability of health care to many Americans.
It's really the key to the entire statute. The reason that some of us, indeed most of us, have health care is precisely because we don't know when we're going to need it. That's about 85% of us. Now, there are about 15% of us who could afford health care but decide to take their chances. They really cost us a lot because they go to the emergency room and we end up paying for them. So not knowing is precisely why we all have to be in this pool, and we want the biggest pool possible because all of us will pay less. We'll spread the risk.
Since the implementation of the law, how has it impacted regular working class families?
Oh, goodness. And this is what is so attractive about the law. Do people really want to see go away the notion that there's no lifetime limit just when you need it? Do they want to see go away that a kid, especially in tough times, can't be carried on the insurance policy of the parents? Or that the copay that seniors used to have to pay for mammograms and colonoscopies, they're going to really see that go away. And those are things that are piling up until 2014 when all of them will be in existence, and a lot more than that I've named.
What are your constituents here in the district saying to you about the law?
My constituents strongly favor the law, even though we ourselves have had a very progressive system where we tried to cover everybody, including undocumented aliens. But I just saw a doctor who practices in the District of Columbia. He says, "Congresswoman, can you speak to the mayor? Because they are cutting health care so badly." And the reason they're cutting health care badly is we can't take that burden any longer. Some of it has to be taken by the federal government.
What are you expecting in the months ahead related around this issue?
Well, I spend most of my life as a constitutional lawyer, so I better watch out. I do see the new ground, and it's only slight new ground in my judgment, because it makes you pay for something. But I do believe that this bill is constitutional. And I think that there may be some parts of the court that we normally consider with the conservative majority who may agree with us.
Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton from Washington, D.C., thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, always.
We've been joined by Congressman Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We stand here today just across the street from the United States Supreme Court, where the justices will begin taking a look at the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. What are your initial thoughts of this process?
Well, first of all, it's a good thing that America has this debate about health care, because it's an opportunity for people to become informed about what the benefits are of the existing law and what the implications are if the law is struck down. As someone who voted for the bill, I understand the benefits as well as the flaws in it. At the same time, I believe that what this bill does is it regulates the consumption of health care, and with health care costs rising three times the rate of inflation, with health care profits soaring, if we can't find a way to regulate this for-profit system in an effective way and provide that health care can be affordable, then we are looking at the destruction of many American family budgets. And the alternative, a national health care system. So we, either way, we have to continue our efforts to try to change this system.
Congressman, you had mentioned the implications of the law being struck down. What are those implications?
Well, let's look at what some of the benefits are right now. You have children who are young people under the age of 25 who had the dependent coverage was extended to them under this law. You have children under the age of 19 who previous to the Affordable Care Act passing, they were denied insurance, and they were denied benefits based on pre-existing conditions. This bill helped them. You had medical plans before this bill passed. Medical plans were able to put lifetime dollar limits on health care benefits. They can't do that anymore because this law changed that. Before this bill passed, you had plans did not have to cover preventive care, and there was no cost sharing. Now they have to cover preventive care. Insurance companies can't rescind coverage. Yeah, and there's also limits on the ratio of premium spent on administrative costs compared to medical costs. So there are benefits here in this bill that are in effect right now.
Do you think that those who are in opposition to this understand how important some of these benefits are to real working class families?
Well, I think the strongest opposition is coming from the insurance industry. They spent, you know, upwards of $86 million just trying to beat the bill in the first place. But in the interim period, they're the ones making a big profit. They will keep raising the rates. If we don't have any regulation, it'll be a bonanza for the insurance company. It's like with the insurance companies, heads I win, tails you lose. We have to have regulation. People may not be fully apprised of all the benefits they could get out of this bill because the debate, you know, really has centered around the individual mandate. You know, that can be arguable. Matter of fact, it's arguable at the Supreme Court this week. However, if the court comes down on the side of the ability of Congress to pass laws that regulate the consumption of health care, then it will uphold that individual mandate. If the court says it's a violation of Congress, the Commerce Clause, they'll strike it down, and I think that then could put us, and the whole bill could fail then, and that could put us on a path towards single payer. So either way, health care is never going to be the same in America as it was before this debate happened, and there's greater public awareness about the necessity of changing the healthcare system and of moving towards a point of single payer, which is what I advocate.
Strictly from the perspective of the betterment of society, how important is it for Americans to have access to affordable healthcare? How important is it to expand that opportunity to many people as possible?
I believe healthcare is a basic right. Now, there's a principle here of is there a moral obligation of a government to care for its people? I would argue yes. In an economy where one out of every $6 goes for healthcare spending. But when you consider that out of that about $2.7 trillion a year, one out of every three of those dollars goes for corporate profits, for stock options, for executive salaries, for advertising, for marketing, for the cost of paperwork. When you consider that for-profit system takes $900 billion a year out of the economy for its own purposes and not for the care for the American people, what the Supreme Court does, one way or another, is going to have monumental impact on the lives of every single American. And that's why we're here.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Congressman Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. Congressman, talk to the audience about the work that you put in and that your colleagues in Congress put in getting this bill to become a law.
Well, yeah, I wasn't for it initially because I want a not-for-profit system. Eventually, I went for it to show that it's possible to have reform within the context of a for-profit system. There was a tremendous effort made to get this passed. But here we are with the Supreme Court deciding this week, or at least hearing the arguments this week about the bill. We are at a moment of decision whether or not health care reform can proceed, or whether we have to go back to square one. If this bill proceeds, then we'll look towards an implementation. If not, if any provision of it is struck down, we may see the whole bill go down. The court, on the other hand, may decide that it's not going to rule at all because there's an Anti-Injunction Act which says you can't really rule on a tax issue until it goes into effect. So they could kick the can down the road for another 3 years, during which time, more and more people will be affected by the bill.
Congressman Dennis Kucinich, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Good to be here. And if anyone needs any further information on health care and my position on it, Kucinich.us.
And we've been joined by Congresswoman Donna Christensen of the U.S. Virgin Islands. Congresswoman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So the Supreme Court is taking up the argument over the health care law.
Heading over there.
What are your expectations?
My expectations are just based on law and constitution, that the law will prevail, that we will not have it struck down, any part of it.
What is your role in this battle?
My role, well, I'm a member of the Committee on Energy and Commerce, and so I was there all through all of those hearings that we had through the markup and actually had some amendments that were passed in the bill. And also as a member of the Tri-Caucus, the Black, Hispanic, and Asian Caucus, we had some specific asks in this bill, and we were able to get many of them in that would help minorities and poor communities and rural communities beyond this consumer protections.
What were some of those asks that you got included?
Well, the expansion of community health centers, community health worker grants. We tried for something called health empowerment zones, but what we got were community transformation grants, help for, as we need to expand our health workforce, some provisions and language that would support the training of underrepresented minorities in that healthcare workforce. And there were several others.
As you work to ensure that this law stays intact in full, what do you think is the most important part of it?
Well, the one that's going to be up for debate tomorrow, the individual mandate, is very important because that really is the key to being able to provide all of the other benefits, including those that tens of millions of Americans are benefiting from today, like you cannot exclude a child who has a pre-existing disease, keeping your young people on your parents' insurance until they're 26. I had to let my daughter go at 22. The end of lifetime and lifetime limits and annual caps, the closing of the donut hole, and all of the things that we've done to strengthen Medicare, including extending its solvency for 8 years.
With your background in healthcare and having been an emergency room physician, talk about what you've seen with people coming in maybe to an emergency room almost as a last resort.
You cannot get the kind of care that you need from an emergency room. And when you talk about minorities in particular, there are studies that show that minorities die with the same injuries going into emergency room, especially Hispanics. So we don't want our people going into emergency rooms. And they need that kind of continuity of care. They need to have their care managed. And that's impossible in an having to go to emergency room. We need that coverage, that access to really comprehensive health care.
How does that change a person's life throughout the course of their life, knowing that they're covered for health care expenses? It's not something that would wipe them out financially.
Yeah, well, the security is great. And that also applies, you know, some people feel like by extending this to everyone, we're taking away something from somebody else. Well, we're not taking away anything for people who are already insured. We're making their insurance even more secure. But to know that you can get your preventive care, that you can stay healthier longer, that means you have more productive years of work and a better quality of life. That changes the whole dynamic for many, many people who have not had access to the 30-plus million people who have not had health care before.
Congresswoman, what do your constituents say to you about this law?
They want it to protect it. Even a place like the Virgin Islands, the territories, we're experiencing a lot of benefits. We have all the consumer protections. We have increases in our Medicaid funding. And we're able to have an exchange if we want one. We have to decide on that. But my constituents are glad to have this law, and they want to see it protected.
Congresswoman Donna Christensen from the U.S. Virgin Islands, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll be joined by Center for American Progress President Neera Tanden.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Neera Tanden, the president of the Center for American Progress. Neera, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are just steps away from the Supreme Court as they begin to look at the constitutionality of the health care law. What are your thoughts?
I think that this case is going to be decided on behalf of the federal government, I think, and the American people, in my view. The court is taking 3 days. That's historic. But I also think the reason they're doing that is because they want to ensure that people on both sides feel like they got a good day in court. And I think if you look at the appellate courts and really the weight of precedent, the Supreme Court should affirm on behalf of the government on all the major issues, including the individual mandate.
How important is taking this step of having the court look at this, and what do you think the outcome is going to be then?
Well, I think the people who've opposed the legislation are actually using the courts as a means of undermining the law. You know, I think a lot of Americans have seen think there's something there's cloud or noise around the legislation, and so I think this has been a political effort for the last 2 years to undermine the legislation. And I hope that when the Supreme Court affirms, which I hope it will do, on all issues, that will finally create the space for us to go forward with the bill.
Do you think that then, and you're projecting that to happen, do you think then that will essentially put the case to bed and then you can really move on? Of course, 2014 comes with a full rollout of the rest of the law. Do you see that sort of as just a stepping stone to get to where you want to be?
Yeah, that is actually our hope. And, you know, there are states who are part of this litigation right now who are planning, if they lose in case, you know, the people who are bringing the case, if they lose in front of the Supreme Court, then they will start implementing the bill relatively quickly. So my view is that as soon as we get through this, and hopefully we'll have a speedy decision, obviously it'll come by June, then we will be able to move forward. And a lot of states who've been on the other side of the government on this will be moving forward.
Talk about what the Center for American Progress has been doing around this issue.
Well, I personally worked on the legislation on behalf of the president when it passed. So when I moved over to the center after it passed, I continued to work on it. And CAP has been doing work on many levels. First and foremost, we've been explaining the benefits to the American people, the fact that 2.5 million young adults now have coverage because of the bill, 5 million seniors have received funding for prescription drug coverage because of the bill, and there are many benefits to come. We've also done a lot of work on behalf of in the Supreme Court case itself. We've organized a lot of the amicus briefs. Some of the folks who will be most affected, people who have pre-existing conditions today, breast cancer patients, people with diabetes, a whole host of diseases, they will benefit from this law when it's fully implemented, because we'll no longer have discrimination with people against people with pre-existing conditions. And so we've also helped organize the amicus briefs and the arguments in the broader public around the benefits of the law.
Talk about President Obama and his passion behind this issue. Why is it so important to him?
Well, as I learned during the process of passage of the health care bill, you know, there are many bumps in the road. There are many times we could have turned back. Obviously, it was a very difficult slog. And the person who kept fighting, even when many of his advisors told him not to, was President Obama. And the reason why he kept fighting was, you know, really several reasons. First, you know, our country, this has been a 100-year challenge for our country, one that many presidents have tried and failed. And I think he thought it was a moral issue and a test of what kind of country we are that we would allow people to literally die because they don't have health insurance. And so that, I think, was the moral obligation. And then, you know, his wonky obligation was we have a severe long-term challenge with health care costs, and he wanted to help redress that, and that's what the legislation does as well. And I think, you know, he just realized that part of the test of leadership is not doing the easy things, but doing the tough things and solving our nation's problems. And there's always a sturm und drang when you make change, and there's always opposition when you make change. But there was opposition to Social Security, there was opposition to Medicare, and there's been opposition to the Affordable Care Act. And hopefully, now that Supreme Court hopefully affirms the bill, we will move forward.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Neera Tanden, the president of the Center for American Progress. Neera, do you see this issue as almost a defining point in the president's, almost his legacy?
I think it is the most significant piece of domestic legislation in decades for many presidents, not just this one. So I think it is the hallmark of his presidency so far. And that is why I think that the Supreme Court has to tread very lightly in this regard, in the sense that to wade into the political process, to overturn an act of a legislative piece that was an act of Congress that was, duly passed, not even duly passed, garnered supermajority, and to have nine justices overturn that would be an act of judicial activism of an incredible magnitude. And I've also pointed out that there's really two strains of conservatism here. There's the Tea Party libertarian perspective, which says that which guts the federal government's ability to take federal action by limiting the Commerce Clause. And then there's also, the traditional conservatism, which says we should have deference to executive branch, the congressional branch, because judges shouldn't make law. And this is an area where if you undo the individual mandate or particular provisions of the legislation, then you're really going to have the court litigating out, health care in our country, which is a mistake, I think, that the justices will realize.
Neera, if the judges uphold the law, mm-hmm. how does health care in this country change?
Well, we're in two phases of change for the legislation. Already, we're seeing particular benefits for people, a lot of insurance protections, which is hard to identify with the Affordable Care Act itself, but it's due to the Affordable Care Act, meaning when you get these protections, you don't know that they're part of the Affordable Care Act, but it's important there because of them. And the one, people aren't facing annual limits anymore. Their requirements. So, if you have cancer and you run up a $1 million bill at that point because of the cancer, insurance companies previously would have told you no more coverage, you're on your own just when you need it most. That's no longer the law. You cannot discriminate against children with pre-existing conditions because of the law. But the biggest phase of the law will be implemented in 2014. So that's when you'll see that the exchanges go up. People who don't have health insurance today will be able to afford coverage because they'll get tax credits to pay for it. There'll be a new marketplace for insurance that's better regulated that they can purchase from. And that's when the promise of no one in this country will ever go bankrupt again because of medical costs, that's when that promise will be lived up to.
Do you think that average working class Americans buy into this more and more as they learn about some of these particulars that you just mentioned?
Yeah, I think you're seeing particular demographics and individual Americans coming to the legislation, recognizing that all the lies about the bill as we went through it, death panels and other canards, have turned out to be false. And they're beginning to learn of the benefits, see more people that they know who've been able to be helped by the bill. And you'll see even more in 2014 how those benefits are coming into a place in a way that's very helpful. So, my view of it is that, again, change is difficult, but people, I think the opponents of the bill have created a lot of lies. Something on the individual mandate that needs to really be cleared up is that, it doesn't affect you if you already have health insurance. The government's not making you do anything at all. We're only talking about 15% of the population. And when people learn of that simple fact that the individual mandate doesn't affect you if you already have health insurance, support for the mandate goes up to 60%. That's one of those issues where, again, as people learn more, the support for the bill goes up.
Neera Tanden, the president of the Center for American Progress, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for being here.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our healthcare discussion with Common Cause President and CEO Bob Edgar.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to afge.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined now by Bob Edgar, the president and CEO of Common Cause. Bob, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be here.
So today starts the Supreme Court's hearing of the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. What are you expecting out of this week?
Well, it's going to be a very important week for those of us who care about adding at least 20 million people to the health care rolls. We want to see the health care legislation proceed. It's now a law, not legislation. We want to see it implemented over the next couple years. And I think the Supreme Court has some very important constitutional questions to raise. But of all my reading and understanding the Constitution, having served for 12 years as a member of the United States Congress, I think it's going to be hard for the Supreme Court to do a bad thing, and that is to put this law aside and do it on constitutional grounds. I don't think there are any clear constitutional prohibitions for the U.S. Congress and the president to sign into law legislation broadening the health care coverage.
Do you get the sense the Supreme Court understands the magnitude of this, given the amount of time they're allowing to hear this case?
Absolutely. This is not the longest time that they've provided, but it's the longest time in at least 80 to 100 years. And taking 3 days of the Supreme Court's time signals to everyone that Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the court, and the other members of the Supreme Court realize how important this is. It's been tested in the courts all over the country. There have been split decisions. We know it's going to be a close decision, but the Supreme Court realizes that the whole of the nation's attention is focused on the Supreme Court. A year ago, Common Cause took on the Supreme Court. We're shocked that the Supreme Court has exempted itself from the Judicial Code of Ethics, has no rules of recusal. We're shocked that justices like Scalia and Thomas would participate in Koch brothers events and Scalia would go to Tea Party events. We just believe that the Supreme Court, in its action in 2000 when it decided who was president, and his action for Citizens United just 2 years ago, giving corporations and labor unions the ability to have almost unlimited amounts of money out of their corporate treasuries spent on politics, that the court was embarrassed by both of those actions and does not want to be embarrassed a third time by ruling unconstitutional this law that is so helpful, particularly to poor people and to children.
We know this is an intense political battle. Where do you think the average American stands on this issue?
I think the average American is split. I've seen some polling data where about 50% of the people think the law goes too far and 50% thinks that it doesn't go far enough. There's been an awful lot of propaganda. Common Cause works on evaluating how much money is spent in lobbying. And there's been billions of dollars spent recently to try to degrade the information on this law. Doctors, pharmacies, drug companies, all of the special interests who want to push back on the law have spent an awful lot of money. The good news, though, is that even with all that money, I think most people, when they learn the facts about the health care law, will back off and support it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Common Cause President and CEO and former Congressman Bob Edgar. Congressman, what's at stake here?
What's at stake is that 20 million people, if this law were to be rescinded, would not have the benefit of quality health care moving into the future. This is a seminal piece of legislation, very much like back in the 30s when Social Security was put in place. There was a lot of opposition to it. But over the years, it has been fine-tuned and corrected. And even people in the Tea Party who want to rail against government but say, don't take my Social Security check, I think 25, 30 years from now, people will rail against government but say, don't do away with my health care.
You had mentioned before this idea of money in politics. How dangerous is that?
It's terribly dangerous. 2 years ago, when the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, ruled in Citizens versus the FEC that corporations and labor unions could dip into their corporate treasury and spend those independently for and against specific candidates. And when the Supreme Court allowed unlimited contributions to be given to these third-party super PACs, we changed the dynamic of politics in America. My friend Bill Moyer says this is the most dangerous moment in American history for democracy. We're either going to be a nation that's of and by and for the people or of and by and for large corporations and the wealthy. The Supreme Court's decision did away with laws that had been in place since Teddy Roosevelt's time. And Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, fearful of the railroad interest and the mining interest and all of the corporate interests at the turn of the last century. And he stood up and signed the Tillman Act, which prevented corporations from being involved in politics. I think it worked from 1907 until 2 years ago. And my belief is that the Supreme Court acted inappropriately, wrong, interpreted the Constitution wrong. Now, I should say to your listeners, there is a new website called amend2012.org. That website was created by Common Cause and a coalition of groups who want to push back on the Citizens United decision. We believe corporations are important, but not people. We believe that money is important, but it's not totally speech. In fact, money can stifle speech. And thirdly, we believe that legislative bodies, whether it's a city council, state legislature, or the federal government, should be able to limit money in politics. And we think the Constitution needs to be amended to provide for that so that the Supreme Court can't meddle in this field in the future or hide behind the First Amendment.
How did the arguments this week and then the decision expected later this year, possibly in the summertime, how will those impact the election season?
Well, if the Supreme Court trashes this law, I think Obama, who has banked on this as one of the single most important pieces of legislation in his first 4 years, will be tarnished by that. If the Supreme Court upholds the law, then I think it's going to be hard for the presumed candidate on the Republican side in former Governor Romney to be as critical of health care reform as he's been. It's been very interesting to watch Romney because he put a law in place in Massachusetts that's not too dissimilar to what Obama did. And if he becomes the candidate on the Republican side, it's going to be hard for him to argue against quality health care for all Americans.
Bob Edgar, president and CEO of Common Cause, as well as a former congressman from Pennsylvania, thank you for your time.
Great to be with you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll be joined by Maryland Citizens Health Initiative President Vinnie DeMarco.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand
at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Vinnie DeMarco, the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Vinnie, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Jason. Always a pleasure.
So last week, Vinnie, the Supreme Court heard 3 days of oral arguments around the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. What were your thoughts on that proceeding?
Well, one of the things that disturbed me about a lot of the media discussion of the Supreme Court hearing is this idea that the individual responsibility in the law is the core of the Affordable Care Act. It is absolutely not. It is an important part of it, but the core of this law is expansion of health care to over 30 million Americans who don't have it now in a smart, economically and fiscally sound way, and things like allowing young people to stay in their parents' health care after age 26, reducing to nothing the donut hole in the prescription drugs, which has been hurting our seniors, not letting people be denied health care because of pre-existing conditions, and so many other ways, expanding preventive care and keeping people healthy. There are so many wonderful things in this law, and yes, it is important that people who can afford health care purchase it. Otherwise, they're going to be a burden on all of us when they go in the hospital. That's true, and the individual responsibility is important. But I think what Americans need to understand is that this law will expand health care to over 30 million Americans and make health care more affordable for all of us. So that is one thing that I think did not really come out in a lot of the media discussion of the hearings, because they focus so much on individual responsibility when the real focus should be on the tremendous expansion of health care to 30 to 50 million Americans.
Vinnie, why do you think that conversation shifts so frequently to the individual mandate?
Well, for one thing, that's one of the main items being challenged in the courts. So that's one reason for that. And those who oppose the Affordable Care Act look at that as a wedge way to upset people about the law. And what those of us who understand how much this law is going to help Americans are want to make sure people understand is that the average American is going to benefit tremendously from this law. Right now, when you purchase your health insurance and pay every year a premium, $1,000 of that premium goes to pay for health care for the uninsured. That is a hidden health care tax that we all pay now. To the extent to which the Affordable Care Act is going to substantially reduce the number of people who are uninsured, who are using hospitals without any coverage, that's going to take the burden off of that hidden health care tax we all pay right now. Massachusetts is a good example. They have expanded health care to 97-98% of their population. They have an individual responsibility section requiring people who can afford it to purchase health care, and it's working. Their premiums are going up less than around the rest of the country, and people are not complaining about the individual responsibility. They understand it makes sense, and I think that can happen all around the country in a couple of years. We're hopeful that when the Supreme Court looks carefully at this law, they'll see that it's fully supported by the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, just like the Social Security Act has been, the Medicare and Medicaid, and the Civil Rights laws. All those laws are based on that Commerce Clause, which is fully, fully supportive of the Affordable Care Act.
Vinnie, how do you think ultimately the justices will rule this decision, this case?
Well, you know, anybody who could predict that would be a millionaire right now. But it's we believe, those of us who look carefully at this, that the Supreme Court is going to affirm this law because it is a valid exercise of the Commerce Clause power of the U.S. Constitution. If they overturn this law, that puts everything that's been done since the New Deal at risk under the Commerce Clause. I just don't think the Supreme Court of the United States is going to want to do that.
Vinnie, what's really at stake here? I mean, the justices allowed a significant amount of time for oral arguments to be heard. Do you think that we're at almost a critical turning point in our society with which way we're going to go?
Well, this law is the best thing that's happened for health care in America since the Medicare and Medicaid laws of the 60s. And those laws, Jason, remember, were really challenged at the time. People went to court to challenge them. There were demonstrations against them. People thought they were socialism, all these horrible things. But right now, nobody's talking about repealing Medicare or Medicaid in any real way. And I think the same thing is going to happen with the Affordable Care Act. I think the court's going to uphold it. The people are going to uphold it in this election this November. And in 20 years, people will be benefiting so much from it that nobody will dare challenge it. But I think you're right to say this is a critical point in our history, that we need to see how beneficial this law is. And you know, people talk about half of Americans when their polls say they don't like it. Well, number one, when people ask about the specifics of the law, in almost every case, they like it overwhelmingly, allowing young people to stay in their parents' health care, et cetera. And then the other ironic thing, Jason, is that a significant proportion of the people who tell pollsters they don't like it, when pushed, say they don't like it because they think it doesn't go far enough. So they're actually in support of the goal of the Affordable Care Act, just wanted it to be stronger. You know, everybody does. But this is what's been accomplished. And I'm confident that come this November, when the American people really see the benefits that they've been receiving from this law already and are about to get, they will affirm it in the election.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Vinny DeMarco, the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Vinny, I think you touched on a really solid point earlier when you mentioned that this really impacts middle-class working families. When you're talking to folks in Maryland about the Affordable Care Act, some of those middle-class families, what are they saying about it?
Well, you know, we in Maryland luckily have a wonderful governor, Martin O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, Health Secretary Josh Sharfstein, who, as soon as this law took effect, decided that we in Maryland were going to be one of the leading states in implementing it properly. And that's gotten tremendous support around the state. Everywhere I go, people are really happy that Governor O'Malley has been doing this, has been getting laws passed to make sure the Affordable Care Act is implemented in Maryland in a way that makes healthcare more affordable. One of the key parts of the law is creating these healthcare exchanges, which brings together the power of individuals and businesses who have insurance so they can negotiate from a position of strength with the insurance companies to make sure premiums are reasonable, and also to implement programs like team-based health care through primary care adult networks, value-based insurance, which would encourage people to use quality health care, evidence-based health care, all these methods that in the long term can make health care more affordable. Because that's what all our goal is. Number one, to make sure people are covered, and number two, to make sure that health care is affordable for us. So we in Maryland are very pleased with the direction that Governor O'Malley is taking us in implementing the Affordable Care Act. Just as in Massachusetts, there's overwhelming public support for that law that's been in effect in 2006 or 2007, which is implementing the same kind of health care expansion that the Affordable Care Act is bringing to the whole country.
Vinny, do you find when you talk to people about the Affordable Care Act and you list off some of the provisions that have already been implemented and then maybe talk about some of the things that are coming down the road in 2014, do you find more acceptance of the Affordable Care Act then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The more people know about the specifics in the law, the more they like it. The more they know that young people up to age 26 can stay in their parents' health care, prescription drug costs for seniors are going to go down, seniors will get access to preventative care without having to pay any copays or deductibles. When they hear all these things, they say, yeah, that makes sense. You got to remember, we've been trying for so long to deal with this problem. And luckily, President Obama was able to do it in a really wonderful way that is going to help tens of millions of Americans and make healthcare more affordable for all of us. So I think that, again, the more people know about the specifics of this law, the stronger support for it will get.
And what's the impact on small business? Are there incentives for small businesses to get involved as well?
Well, one of the things we loved about the law from the beginning is that there are, at the moment, already in place, tax credits for small businesses to help them afford health care for their employees. And we have been doing press conferences from one end of Maryland to the other, highlighting that and letting people know that these tax credits are there, and more businesses are taking advantage of them. So that's number one way that it helps small businesses. Number two is the exchanges I talked about earlier will allow businesses around the country to pool their resources and be part of a large group negotiating with insurance companies and promoting programs that encourage affordable health care coverage. So small businesses will be significantly better off now because of the Affordable Care Act.
Vinny, if someone is listening from Maryland and they are interested in trying to get some health coverage, or they might be in a situation where they need it, what can they do?
Well, if they're interested in the issue, they can look at our website, healthcareforall.com. If they have a problem with their own healthcare coverage, one way you can address that is your local health department. If you're in Baltimore City, it's the Baltimore City Health Department, or whatever county you're in, which you could easily find online, or you could just check our website, healthcareforall.com.
And if people want to get involved and sort of push the cause a little further and maybe join up with you all, what can they do to participate?
Just go to our website, www.healthcareforall.com, and there are ways in there that you can help out. And, you know, Jason, our legislative session is about to close in less than a week in Maryland, and we're going to have, I believe, a tremendous three-way healthcare victory. Number one, the legislature is poised to pass Governor O'Malley's proposed healthcare exchange law to make sure the Affordable Care Act is implemented in Maryland in a way that makes healthcare more affordable. Number two, last year we passed a substantial increase in the state's alcohol tax to reduce teen drinking and alcohol abuse, and that is the money from that tax is now being allocated to public health purposes, including healthcare expansion. And third, we're about to pass a historic increase in the tax on little cigars and smokeless tobacco, which are deadly products that kids use, which they shouldn't. And this tax will deter them from doing that and save a lot of lives. And the money that's raised from that tax, like the alcohol tax, will go into the state coffers to help, we believe, to help make sure healthcare is affordable. So we're going to have these tremendous successes. And if you want to find out more about it and how you can help in the last few days by contacting your legislators, go to our website, healthcareforall.com.
Vinny, you had mentioned, referenced a couple of issues from obviously back in the 60s, and you're well-versed in what's going on now with the Affordable Care Act. As you look at where we've been in this country on health care, where we are now, what do you think the future holds?
Well, you got to remember, Jason, as you know well, presidents of the United States have been trying to enact something like the Affordable Care Act since Teddy Roosevelt in the early 1900s. And we did get the Medicare and Medicaid in the 60s. That was great. But we still needed to do more. And finally, under President Obama's leadership, we got the Affordable Care Act. The future is going to be making sure the Affordable Care Act works. Like most things in America, it is in many ways a federal state private partnership, and all of us in every state need to work hard to fully implement it. Again, we're lucky in Maryland to have a governor and lieutenant governor committed to making it work work properly. Sadly, in some other states, they're going the wrong direction. I'm hoping that after this election and hopefully the Supreme Court's decision upholding the law, everybody in the country will be able to make as much progress as we're going to make in Maryland.
Vinny DeMarco, president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Vinny, always great having you on the program.
Thank you. You have a terrific show, and have a good week.
Thank you to our guests this week, U.S. Representatives Eleanor Holmes Norton, Dennis Kucinich, and Donna Christensen. Also, thank you to Center for American Progress President Neera Tanden, Common Cause President and CEO Bob Edgar, and Maryland Citizens Health Initiative President Vinny DeMarco. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife.